Thank you, Your Excellency. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, let me express my deepest appreciation for having been invited by WIPO to this conference and the pleasure to address you today on the issue of intellectual property in sustainable agriculture. It is most appropriate that the previous speaker did set the stage, and in many ways, although we have not communicated, I believe that I would not be overlapping very much, not duplicating what you've said. As you all know, climate change and soaring, then full of volatile food prices, growing numbers of hungry people, the current economic downturn and financial crisis, these are all major challenges that have given rapidly become heavily intertwined threats to development. Together, they not only hinder our way forward in many poor countries, they also jeopardize hard-won progress towards achieving the Millennium Development Goals. Now, if we are to effectively tackle these challenges, we urgently need to we need a new generation of agricultural technologies to promote another green revolution, which, in the words of the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, permits sustainable yield improvements with minimal environmental damage and contributes to sustainable development goals. This second generation green revolution must build on the achievements of the first and learn from its successes and its failures. It is, of course, a daunting task, professionals such as yourselves, because on the one hand, we are expected to contribute to improving the well-being and strengthening the food security of growing numbers of poor and hungry people, while on the other, at the same time, demand is growing for more nutritious and better quality food, which inevitably pushes prices up. It is well established that agriculture is a key engine of economic growth and is essential to sustain human development. However, while agricultural growth is an economic and social imperative, it too must be sustainable in order to secure the future well-being of humankind. Now, making agriculture and rural development more sustainable is critical for reducing global poverty. With 1.7 billion more mouths to feed by 2030, the ratio of arable land to population is set to decline by 40 to 50% over the same period, and 1.4 billion people today living in poverty with less than $1.25 a day, and 1.02 billion people going hungry. It is obvious that global agriculture has never been under greater pressure to increase production and productivity. To be sustainable, agriculture needs to be economically viable, environmentally sound, and socially acceptable. And as World Food Prize laureate Peter Per Pinstrup Andersen has reminded us, world agriculture cannot be sustainable without a science-based technology. Scientific innovation can and must support economic growth and the development of sustainable agriculture. Agricultural technologies have helped deliver considerable results over the last century, substantially raising yields while limiting agricultural land expansion. But innovation needs a supportive environment in which to thrive, and intellectual property rights protection plays a key role in creating such an environment. Earlier speakers of today have underlined this fact. And so we know that intellectual property rights have the potential to foster technological development. However, we also know that in the context of agriculture, the situation is not so simple. Studies by Quile and Kamere Mbote of the International Environmental Law Research Center have put three key issues on the table. The first, it has long been known that the IPRO system mostly benefits large private companies and rich countries, at the expense of small companies and poor countries. Second, the appropriate scope of protection has long been the object of debate, and the balance between the need to provide incentives for research into new technological innovations and the desire to reward inventors has always been difficult to find. And third, it is not tenable to separate IPRs from sustainable development. In developing countries in particular, the adoption and the implementation of TRIPS has clearly shown that the introduction of intellectual property rights not only has economic and technological consequences, but also human rights, social, environmental, and agricultural consequences. And so, in the real world, hundreds of millions of smallholder farmers, who are the primary custodians of a vast array of genetic resources and stewards of much of the world's biodiversity, need to be protected from actions that limit their rights to use, exchange, or sell farm-safe seeds and materials. These farmers are poor rural people who depend almost entirely on agriculture for their livelihoods. Worldwide agriculture is enormously diverse, and location-specific technologies are often needed to cater to a range of agroecological conditions. IPRs in agriculture are therefore unique, as they include a number of issues such as unfair competition, farmers' rights, access to genetic resources, biodiversity conservation, health, and environmental safety. The Green Revolution that transformed economic development in Asia through improvements in crop varieties, tillage practices, water use, fertilizer usage, weed and pest control, and new technologies for harvests was made possible by the use of science, crop area expansion, and intensification of input use. Significantly, scientific innovations were largely freely available to farmers. It's argued that the Asian Green Revolution led to agricultural yield increases in a scale-neutral way that improved equity with respect to smallholders and rural people by providing more agricultural sector jobs and decreasing urban food prices. But today's innovative crop production techniques are largely the result of innovation systems that have been developed in rich countries with the participation of a range of professionals, including university and public research center scientists, private sector specialists, and policymakers. A great many of them are not freely available to farmers or researchers. Innovative plant breeding technologies, often combining traditional knowledge, modern science, such as biotechnology, are already making an impact in addressing the challenge of food security. But there is a case in point, as I mentioned earlier. A good case is Nerica rice, Nerica new rice for Africa varieties, which have been a major factor contributing to the growth in rice production in Africa. And according to recent FAO statistics, rice production in Africa is expected to reach about 23.2 million tons in 2008 from a level of 60 million tons about 7 years ago in 2001. This is clearly proof of a product from agricultural research that is not tied to any patents that has become available for the use of smallholder farmers to increase productivity. Intellectual property rights, such as those related to seeds, have been the subject of much controversy. We urgently need an open debate on the elements, tools, and limits of intellectual property protection in the agricultural sector, and the need to reconcile and the commercial interests of IP holders with public concerns. IP in plant sciences can be protected in a number of ways, and several examples have been given. But let us name a few. WIPO deals with issues related to patent harmonization, counterfeit, protection of farmers' traditional knowledge, WTO with inclusion of TRIPS and enforceability of IPR for plants, and FAO with the International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources for Food and Agriculture, and these three bodies have been very well represented at this conference. We have been told that the Green Revolution in Asia resulted in a shift in productivity, growth, and commercialization of agriculture in many developing countries. But today, large agribusinesses such as Monsanto, Syngenta, and Cargill are developing seeds and related technologies through genetic engineering and biotechnology, which could be commercialized on a large scale. We are thus witnessing a debate about the role of innovation, technology transfer, and the importance of improved access to knowledge. But the question is, are we witnessing yet another shift in agricultural patterns? If that is the case, what strategic role should we be playing as an international financing institution and partner to poor rural people? Let's look at a shift from a public-private divide to partnerships. Public sector agricultural research at both national and international levels has played a crucial role in providing free and open access to modern technology for a large number of subsistence farmers. Agricultural research has delivered great results, increasing yields and lifting millions of people out of poverty and hunger. However, the historical decrease in public sector ag research and the management of innovation developed by the private sector raised new challenges for policymakers, stakeholders, innovators, and the public. The Consultative Group on International Agricultural Research, the CGIAR, plays a major role in promoting agricultural research that produces public goods. However, an important emerging aspect of its work is the exploration and development of new forms of partnership and collaboration with the private sector. In comparison to the private sector, public sector ag research is obviously more limited in committing adequate resources to the development and diffusion of improved or new technologies. One result of this situation is that we are increasingly seeing large corporations restricting access to new technologies that smallholder farmers desperately need in order to be competitive. For example, proprietary DNA sequence information on banana was restricted by Syngenta, and only when supplied by Syngenta to Promusa, an international working group on banana sponsored by Biodiversity International, could markers be developed to confirm infection of banana plants, such as bacterial wilt, in the field. It is hoped that additional markers to select for banana clones that are resistant to bacterial wilt will be identified. Clones of resistant material could then be transferred to national programs such as NAS, the NAS in Uganda, NARU, for distribution to farmers. But more recently, we have been seeing the emergence of new forms of partnership between the public and the private sector. For example, public institutions have been working with small agro-dealers in developing countries for extension purposes, training them to write business plans and giving demonstrations so that they can then pass the expertise to farmers and help them get microcredit lines. This kind of work is still in the early stages, but it is another promising example of how we need to build public-private bridges. Now, how do we keep innovation results in the public domain? Inputs for agricultural research frequently come with conditions attached, and these affect the distribution of the end results. Another example, a private sector corporation may attach the condition that material is only to be used for research or cannot be distributed in certain countries. Such conditions can be a stumbling block for public institutions that need to be sure that they will be able to freely distribute successful products of their research, and indeed the conditions attached to research inputs has been the predominant dilemma for many years to public sector research centers. Members of the CGIAR, the key concern is that distribution is allowed to their target groups, subsistence farmers in the developing world. Experts will tell you, however, that it is always preferable to negotiate for no conditions to be attached at all. And for this reason, negotiating conditions that allow effective use of research material and products is a key part of the role of public research institutions. As more and more genes are becoming available for use in marker-assisted selection and access to genes speeds research tremendously, it is vital that public sector research find ways to use these inputs which have often been produced by private companies. In recent years, public research bodies have also been exploring ways to cooperate with the private sector in the distribution of research products such as improved seed. Private companies' distribution networks can be an effective way of reaching small farmers in countries where the public sector network cannot do the job. And once again, agreements need to be negotiated, and the drafting of agreements with the private sector for distribution of research products and plant materials is also a vital tool to build understanding about roles and responsibilities. Let me briefly dwell upon protective publishing in agricultural research. Intellectual property management within the context of public research organizations is much about ensuring access as it is about protecting rights. In keeping research material in the public domain, sometimes means protecting it from patenting by others. For example, in 2005, the International Crops Research Institute for the Semi-Arid Tropics, with headquarters in India, initiated an innovative partnership with the European Patent Office to ensure that their publications were available to patent offices and will thus qualify as prior art, thus minimizing the likelihood that they would be patented by others. In 2007, the CGIAR recommended that all centers be encouraged to incorporate their publications in databases used by patent examiners. The Centro Internacional de Agricultura Tropical, based in Colombia, signed a similar agreement with the European Patent Office in 2009, and ECRISAT is also planning similar collaborations in India based on this experience. A little bit on traditional knowledge and ethical obligations. Adequate and fair reward for traditional knowledge is a concern that is mainly relevant in developing countries where farmers grow a wide range of varieties and save seeds, unlike farmers in developed countries who mainly grow one high-yield variety of a crop and buy their seeds from seed companies. For this reason, we need to help farmers in poor countries understand what their rights are, and in this respect, there are very well-documented progress with respect to farmers' rights and the rights of indigenous peoples. At the same time, we need to ensure that public research institutions and indeed private corporations understand their ethical obligation to reward farmers for traditional knowledge that they provide. For example, where farming communities provide the parents of a successful hybrid, although this material may not be protected under IPR, the research institution or private company should ensure that the community benefits from the results by, for example, bringing back improved material for community use or enabling them to take part in early trials. There are several ways in which we can encourage pro-poor innovations. Public research institutions have mandates that allow them to assess technologies developed by others that have potential pro-poor benefits, and to purchase the title to these and put them in the public domain. This approach has the potential to save public research funds at the same time as creating a market for innovations produced privately. Such a market would encourage research that would not normally be undertaken by private innovators. IPRs such as protective patenting and global public goods research, supported by strategic public-private partnerships, can serve as catalysts for sustainable agricultural growth without undermining access and more equitable benefit-sharing arrangements. Protection of innovations should provide economic and social incentives to all stakeholders. This will stimulate the development of other innovative products and technologies that help expand knowledge and culture and foster collaboration between the farming communities and professionals. There may be opportunities to build value chains around agricultural innovations and to provide incubation support if the benefits from these innovations have to be disseminated to consumers far and wide, and also to ensure that when commercialized, all the actors involved receive their due share. We must ensure that IPRs work effectively with agricultural innovations designed for use by poor smallholder farmers, as seen, for example, in the identification and development of elite populations of cassava by institutions of the CGIAR in sub-Saharan Africa. The lack of appreciation on the part of formal research and development actors of the knowledge that exists with the rural poor and how it could be used for commercial benefits undermines attempts to do this effectively. In order to rekindle interest among policymakers and donors to increase investments in pro-poor research, we must demonstrate that it is driven by the principles of effectiveness, efficiency, equity, and sustainability. So, what are the lessons learned and the way forward? In order to do this, we must effectively exploit the capacities and the potential for partnership of all R&D partners in both the public and private sector, including advanced centers of excellence, national research institutions and services, CSOs, community-based organizations, civil society in the developing countries that could be better integrated into the mainstream work of the global agricultural research system. Only in this way can we ensure that the best scientific capacity available is deployed to respond to the problems of poor, disadvantaged communities. Globally, there has been positive movement recently in investments targeting pro-poor research and development. However, in general, very few investors in agriculture and rural development have adequately realized the role that agricultural biodiversity can play in addressing poverty and household food security in an eco-sustainable way. In the field of research, as in many other areas of development, we need to build bridges between the private and public sectors. My institution, IFAD, is well placed to do this through the projects that we support. And as a co-sponsor of the CGIAR, we have supported many successful examples of development and diffusion of promising crops and commodities, from such an example, for example, the Nerica varieties of rice, the rain-fed durum wheat, to faba beans and roots and tubers such as cassava, legume crops such as pigeon pea. I would like to take this opportunity to urge organizations such as WIPO to continue and to increase their valuable work in the field of sustainable agriculture. Science has always been a collaborative enterprise, and nowhere is this collaboration more urgently needed today than in the field of agriculture and food security. Once again, thank you for this invitation and thanks for your kind attention.